Well, we moved to Maldon in 1964 when my husband was transferred to work in the workshop in Baden Savills in the High Street, which is now Town Row. He came there to work in their engineering department at the back, mending radios, televisions, all sorts of things. And it was quite funny because they actually thought that he was a spy from head office. But he wasn't at all, but there we are. We moved here and I started looking for a job, and I went to work at Goldanger Fruit Farms. And I was amazed how this canning operation was, and the girls working in the factory was stood on like pallets because everywhere was so wet. But they canned peas and all sorts of things in the in that little factory.
And what was your role?
I worked in the office doing some of the clerical work there. But I wasn't there that long because I then worked at English Electric Valve. Just dropped into the job because I used to walk in the morning with my neighbour and the man who was the manager at EEV, and he said, "Oh, she seems quite a nice girl. Would she like a job here?" So I worked there until I had a family.
Where were they based?
They were based in Gate Street, where all that housing development is. That was EEV then. And it was full of Cincinnati machines, and I used to think that Cincinnati sounded so exotic, and I looked at these machines and thought, they don't look very exotic, but we worked there, and it was quite a big place there. Then after that I had my children, so then, you know, I had quite a time off because obviously women didn't work then. Their jobs weren't kept open. You were regarded as, your job was looking after the children. And if you worked, it was only for pin money, not career or anything like that. But after they got older, I started going back to work, and I worked for Brush Aggregates. And their offices were where the Muddy Duck is now, but that was quite a big organisation. He had a lot of HGV lorries and drivers. He had the Heybridge pits, he had pits at Birch for sand and gravel extraction, and in Suffolk. So it was quite a big organisation at one time. And then after that I gradually went back to working as a civil servant, as I'd worked before. And I worked in the job centre in Maldon, which was situated at 112A High Street, which was between where the, it's a computer place now, but it was where the nail bar is, and that it didn't used to be a nail bar, obviously, then. I think it was a butcher's. And the hairdressers, Graham's the hairdressers.
So is that where TDR is at the moment?
Yeah, that was the job centre.
Right.
Yeah, okay. And behind it was the customs office and twice a week the benefit office came there. But we were normally there most of the time on our own, just taking jobs, things like that. A lot of the work in Maldon then was probably, the farms still employed quite a lot of labour because there wasn't as mechanised then. But there were quite a bit of engineering and small engineering places as well. But there were sads and Bentalls, and Stevenson Carter came. And in Burnham on Crouch, because we covered the whole of the Dengie 100, so Burnham on Crouch still had people working in the boating industries, you know, the sails and making sails and doing the engineering work on boats, like it was still in Maldon. I mean, the barges were still quite, seemed to be here more frequently then, and Tollesbury was the same. They had an engineering little factory there for boats there. So it was quite, still quite, I suppose, a big parish, really, and large village atmosphere, I think. And it came, you know, people expected to have a job for life still then and work for the same company and were loyal to that company and didn't feel there were anything wrong in that sort of attitude, that you got a job, you tried to progress in the job, but then the company probably helped you train for other things, so you were loyal to them, you stayed with them and maybe retired from them. But now that is not looked on. It is now, you mustn't be ambitious or anything if you stay. So loyalty seems to have taken, to me, much more of a backward prominence, I suppose. It's not as important as you striving and getting on, maybe.
So what sort of period were you talking about when there's...
Well, I would say the 70s and that sort of era was more when that. But I think one of the troubles with Malden is that it is at the end of the line. You go to Malden. You don't actually pass through to go somewhere else. Mm. And so when companies started feeling the pinch and looking at much more automatic machines doing what these men in the Cincinnati machines had done, then they wanted to recoup their resources into one bigger factory. So small outlets, like in a place like Malden, where it wasn't as big, then they could accommodate it all back in Chelmsford. Mm. So it started with things like that being moved out of the town. And then, of course, we got the financial crash and all that involved. So it meant that lots of companies failed. And a lot of people in Malden probably... Well, I've interviewed people in the job centre that had never been to Chelmsford. Okay. That they were so instilled in this little life that they had here. So the recession, I think, did come as a real shock to people. Because they never anticipated that their jobs would go.
The crash you're referring to is what period?
That was in the 80s.
Right.
Where, you know, everything in the country was harder. And they, of course, then found themselves, you know, that you'd say, well, there is a job in Chelmsford. Oh! And, of course, it wasn't particularly a wealthy town, and a lot of people didn't even drive. And Beeching had closed the two railway stations, so you only had a bus, if you had, you know. So it was quite difficult. I mean, we did all record. I went out to companies and did redundancy talks at Bradwell Power Station and some of the other big companies, because people were so shocked that they were going to have to sign for benefit and really worried that they were having, and ashamed in some ways, because they never thought that I'm a worker, I don't sign on for benefit, you know, and all this. But of course, they had to, because they couldn't provide for their families without some help.
You were providing benefits as well as finding jobs, were you, at that stage?
Yes, they transferred. I mean, the job centre was itself a problem of this. We were closed. And at one time, when I first started back in the job centre, we went to Burnham-on Crouch 2 days a week as well. So all that, and Witham, all went into Chelmsford. into one big office. So, you know, I wasn't immune from having to reassess at what I was going to have to do. But I think a lot of people did find it extremely hard. I mean, you know, men were coming in who couldn't even tell their family that they'd been made redundant because the shame that they felt and the worry of how am I going to...
Did you have to help them with that side of things as well?
Yes.
That. What could you do for them?
Well, you could listen.
Right.
Because if they felt so... I suppose not to say... ashamed is really to say the most feeling that they had that they were not providing. You could listen to them. And in some scenarios, make them a cup of tea, take them outside, you know, because you were in an open office, take them into a little private place and just let them get it out. And say, you know, things are never as bad as they seem. You will get something else, you know. And we did start in the job centres these schemes, really, to get people retrained. And one of the things that we did, they were called community projects, and all the Hythe in Malden, all that work there, where it's all paved and what, that was a community project that the job centres did. And, you know, it gave them quite a lot of, you know, I'd be out on a Saturday night in the pub and, you know, somebody would come up to me and say, have you seen what we've done this week? Have you seen what we've done? And the joy on their face to be occupied, and that was, it was wonderful, really. And so that side of it was a lift, you know, but others, it took them a long time to accept that that way of life almost had finished. They had to move on to a more automated, travelling, different skills maybe, you know, and they set up training sections, you know, and they could go and learn to be a plumber, electrician, or bricklaying, all things like that. They went for 26 weeks, so that helped a lot. But of course, you know, for a company, say, like Bradwell Power Station, their wages had been extremely good. So it was a lot of them took the packages, and really, most of them could well have been, say, 55, or, and really, they then probably did little odd jobs just on their own to fill their time as much as anything.
Did people tend to move away from the area, or did they stay put?
No, I think they stayed put because to move is an expensive project. And really, at that time, probably the houses in Malden were never sort of as expensive. So to sell your house in Malden and try and move just into Chelmsford was a lot of expense for most people that they couldn't probably afford. And there was still a lot of, you know, there were quite big council estates still in Malden when we first moved here. I know they could start buying them, but I don't think they were particularly affluent, really.
Do you think the role of a job centre has changed from what you can see?
Well, I think it changed more. I mean, when you were solely finding jobs for people, you were encouraging them and talking to employers and finding out what they wanted and trying to slot a pea into a pod, that sort of thing. Whereas once the government merged the job centres and the benefit office, there is always then the question of money that you're receiving. And I'll be the first to say that you pay your insurance things, and it is an insurance, and you're entitled to it. But by that same token, with every right comes a responsibility. And the responsibility comes when you need to look for a job. And of course, if you're just serving people with jobs and trying to get them back into work, it's a different ball game. If you're also issuing them and you're signing them for benefit, you're signing them to say that they are actually looking for work. Mm-hmm. And that is the responsibility that comes in with the right. Mm. And it does, I think, put a different pressure on people working there.
Mm. Must be a very difficult role. Yeah.
Because not everybody is capable of being able to do all kinds of jobs. And I think the one thing that it did teach me is that most people are only just probably 2 months short of being behind with their mortgage. Because if you've no money coming in, you know, and you're in a young family, most people still at that time didn't have a lot of savings behind them. So I think, and the other side of it is, you could go to work one day, be a builder, fall off the roof, and never ever be able to do that job again. And your life's changed in that 5 minutes that you've fallen off that. Mm. So we also did that, you see, looking at how to retrain somebody who thought that they had their own business, was quite secure. And then suddenly, life's changed beyond recognition for them. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that was another aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. So you were wanting to tell me, Jean, about students in particular.
Yes, the students, university students, were actually quite a joy because they came in and they didn't care what it was. They would go and sweep the roads, they'd go and pick apples, they'd go and pick potatoes. Anything that you'd got that was a temporary job for 2 or 3 days, they'd come in, put their head round the door, got any temporary work today, any temporary work? And they'd be off and full of wanting to do it. But actually, that is quite a change from when I finished working, because students then would say, well, that's got nothing to do with my course. And I thought, that what a change, you know, that these people, these youngsters at one time, didn't care what they did as long as they had some money to buy a pint when they went back to university. But now it's not part of my course. Mm. So I did find that quite a change.
Oh. And you mentioned earlier apprenticeships. What kind of apprenticeships were available while you were working?
Well, when I first started, I think companies still had quite a high regard for apprenticeships, because it was still in the era where they trained their staff to work for them and they expected them probably to stay there. I mean, my husband's a prime example. He worked for a company, had a television radio engineering apprenticeship, but he was then expected to stay for 2 years after that apprenticeship finished. So almost a little bit of a payback, but it guaranteed them good, educated and useful staff for them. And I think that was how a lot of companies, even the banks, wanted people at 16 then to train them how they wanted them to work, not after going to university and maybe a degree that had nothing to do with banking or whatever. And I think people like English Electric Valve and Marconi's actually did a wonderful apprentice scheme, and I'm sure in lots of ways they are still doing that. But I think in a lot of smaller companies probably can't afford the outlay of a proper apprenticeship that lasts for 4 or 5 years, because that is quite an outlay for a small company. But you then, if you don't invest in the lower end, by the time you've got people retiring, you are then having to buy staff in. So it swings and roundabouts, I suppose. But I think at the minute, I think that apprenticeships are in short supply that will give a youngster a full experience of what they should be doing in a company. But it's all transient, isn't it? Where I was saying before, people stayed in a job for life, people don't do that. But we are, I think, losing a lot of skills through that, and I know there's automation. But I think in the 80s and that, when it was the thing to move things with computers or banking or whatever, and the service industry, let's have a service industry, we forgot about the manual trades, such as plumbers, electricians, bricklayers, carpenters. And now, of course, the country is desperate for these people. You can earn amazing amounts of money now if you are a bricklayer, a plumber, an electrician. Whereas, you know, before, you were looked on almost as, he works with his hands. I mean,
well, still there was a prejudice.
Definitely a prejudice to it. And I come from a northern background, so I'm used to men working with their hands and things like that. And I'm full of pride that people can do that. I just envy their skills of all description, be it somebody being able to sew a dress or, you know, embroider something wonderfully. And the same with a man that can create, I shouldn't say a man in this day and age, should I, but a person who will change wood into a cabinet and piece of metal into something wonderful. It's just an amazing skill to me, and I think it's a pity that we have lost the ability to admire that.
I'm surprised there are still little wells of expertise like that in Maldon still, and I certainly appreciate it.
It is, and I think it but they're all small, aren't they? Because they've got to be either just one or two men. I'm using that as mankind, please. It's just a business that can survive with the skill of two or three people. But then, in lots of ways, that's probably a good thing, because since the pandemic, people want to work from home, want to work locally, so they're all feeling they're not polluting the atmosphere or that, and but they are getting a living, and maybe their living is a better life balance because they're not travelling a lot or whatever. I think it's a pity that youngsters can't get easily onto an apprenticeship. I mean, they can get training, but like in Chelmsford College, they do training for bricklayers and things and carpenters, but it's very hard to get them an apprenticeship, to get the actual life work on working on a site or
some real
installing
experience.
The window frames and things in an actual house and things like that. So I think things, but everything's changing, isn't it? Because now doors and windows come with all the furniture on. So they just slot them in, right, so... But I'm sure new skills are coming along.
How do you think Maldon's changed in your time here,
Jean? Oh, well, it's changed a lot. When we first moved here, there was about 16,000 people lived in Maldon. So it was almost like a large village atmosphere in lots of ways. And now it is obviously quite a substantial town as far as housing and things are concerned. If you're asking me what I miss walking down the high street and smelling the coffee machine in Collins, the grocers at the top. I miss walking past where Marriages used to be, which is turned into Prezzo and now is empty, because you could smell all the animal feed and the farmers there for the market and things on a Thursday. And I miss hearing an Essex accent, because when we first moved here, everybody in Maldon spoke with a rich Essex accent, and I never hear it now, so I do miss that. But I suppose it's like most places in England now. It's growth, and hardly any place has stayed the same. I suppose it's progress in one way, but I do miss little things like that.
Thank you very much, Jean. That's lovely.